Growing up both black and queer in America means navigating a world that often demands you hide essential parts of yourself. George M. Johnson's memoir, All Boys Aren't Blue, invites us into this complex journey with unflinching honesty and profound vulnerability. The title itself is a rebellion against rigid gender norms, a declaration that not all boys fit neatly into society's blue boxes. This cultural touchstone has resonated deeply with young adults seeking representation while simultaneously becoming one of the most banned books in American schools. Between these contradictions lies the power of Johnson's story, the courage to speak truth in spaces designed for silence. What happens when we finally see ourselves reflected in stories? For many readers, this memoir offers that mirror for the first time, showing not just the pain of marginalization, but the beauty of authenticity and the strength found in family bonds. At 5 years old, George lost his front teeth in a playground altercation, a physical injury that became psychological as he grew self-conscious about smiling. This trauma taught harsh lessons. Black boys must be tough, suppress pain, never cry. His family responded with protection rather than therapy, moving forward through strength in a community where mental health carried stigma. The lost smile symbolized denied joy, both black joy and queer joy, representing parts of himself he felt compelled to hide. Even as a successful adult, triggers would transport him back. The metallic taste of blood while brushing too hard, or playground laughter. Years later, when his mother faced life-threatening brain aneurysms, she asked from her hospital bed, "Smile, Matt, just smile." He responded with his most genuine smile since childhood. What's most revealing is the fierce family protection that followed his injury. Relatives immediately sought justice, accepting school suspensions to defend their own. This taught George that while the world might be hostile, he would never face it alone. Isn't this the paradox of childhood wounds? They shape our identity while revealing the healing power of unconditional love. When you're a different child, there's always something about you that must be erased. This painful truth hit home when George's friend Todd warned him boys were calling him a fag and claiming he wanted to be a girl. The solution? Play football with the boys. During that pivotal game, George caught a pass and dragged three boys trying to tackle him into the end zone. Their celebration instantly transformed his social standing. Football and basketball replaced jump rope and feminine activities, though he felt deep sadness abandoning what he truly loved, trading authentic self-expression for social safety. Sports also provided a deflection shield against uncomfortable family conversations about sexuality. Instead of, "Are you dating?" relatives would ask, "How is track going?" Ironically, as an adult, George is now playfully teased for his investment in sports, defying stereotypes about gay men. His fantasy football obsession and basketball knowledge often surprise those with rigid views about masculinity. What does it say about our society that children must perform certain identities to avoid persecution? George's experience demonstrates that identity isn't binary. One can excel at both football and double dutch, dominate in basketball and enjoy dance, unbounded by artificial gender expectations. The central pillar of George's resilience was his grandmother, Nanny, who became his caregiver, business partner, and best friend. She loaned him $100 to start a school candy business and taught him business skills. Together, they sold items at weekend flea markets, and when he needed community service hours, she created a church soup kitchen. Nanny recognized George's isolation as a queer child who didn't fit with peers. While his cousins had friend circles, George had books and homework. She decided she would be his circle, playing cards with him, taking him to flea markets, involving him in her activities. Having experienced other LGBTQ+ family members, she understood what George needed. When she said, "I love each of you differently," she meant, "I love you whole and as you are." While the national homelessness rate for LGBTQ youth approaches 40%, George's family maintained 0% because of this unconditional acceptance. When George came out at 25, she simply affirmed she always knew and loved him regardless. Nanny's love wasn't conditional. It was a sanctuary where George could simply be himself. George entered college planning to be openly gay in Virginia while hiding it from family in New Jersey. Initially isolated, he found connection through his neighbor Monique, who introduced him to friends who became his chosen family. When asked, "Are you gay?" during a car ride, George denied it, continuing his self-denial. Despite aspirations for a fresh start, he couldn't embrace his identity. This double life led to unrecognized depression. Though he initially maintained good grades, he eventually abandoned classes, gave up on coming out, and felt empty. His life devolved into smoking marijuana, working at Ruby Tuesday, and skipping classes. His GPA dropped below 3.0, losing his scholarship. When he called about coming home, his mother surprised him by insisting he figure things out himself. That summer became his refocusing period. A turning point came when George joined Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity, initially seeing it as a path to masculinity. When accused of being gay by one brother, his line brothers supported him through his breakdown. On April 7, 2006, during their public presentation, George declared himself Kalfani, which means king and ruler. With his family cheering, he realized he wasn't chasing masculinity anymore. He was defining it on his own terms. Isn't this the ultimate freedom? Not conforming to others' definitions, but creating your own understanding of what it means to be a man, to be black, to be queer, to be yourself. At 33, writing a memoir initially felt self-indulgent to George until he recognized its deeper purpose, creating the beacon he never had growing up. As a youth, he searched libraries for stories reflecting his experience, finding no heroes who looked like him, loved like him, or struggled like him. No roadmaps existed for young black queer boys trying to maintain family connections while understanding themselves. George wrote to document a black queer-affirming family dynamic rarely portrayed in media. His most valuable lesson is that identity development is fluid. His 5-year-old self playing with dolls wasn't his 15-year-old self navigating high school, who wasn't his 25-year-old self embracing his full identity. When George declares he's not blue, he's asserting his right to self-definition outside societal expectations. He has no regrets. If even one young person finds validation in his story, every vulnerable disclosure was worthwhile. Your story matters. Your identity is valid. Your existence is revolutionary. In a world demanding conformity, living authentically becomes powerful resistance. George's journey reminds us we can create spaces embracing all aspects of ourselves. By sharing our stories, we create pathways for others. What parts of yourself have you been hiding? What would it mean to finally let them breathe in the light?